Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn. Welcome, everybody. It's Saturday, November 24th, 2012, and we are back with Real Estate Straight Talk and Sharon Homer.
Welcome to Real Estate Straight Talk with industry professional Sharon Homer, breaking it down and giving you the inside track on the real estate front so that you too can achieve the new American dream.
Hello and good afternoon, everyone. I am your host today, Sharon Homer. I am excited to host the Real Estate Success Series today with Teresa Martin. Will be today's guest. I'm excited to introduce her. She's a phenomenal woman who is truly living out her purpose while unleashing her passion. She is an experienced real estate attorney, investor, coach, and entrepreneur. And she's also the principal of law offices of Teresa R. Martin. And today is a great example of how she continues to serve her God, use her God-given gifts to encourage, equip, and help others understand sound financial, biblical principles through her generational wealth building series, and which provides opportunities for the everyday person to experience financial freedom in the areas of financial literacy, business ownership, real estate, and stock market investing. Good afternoon, Teresa.
Good afternoon.
I am so excited to have you on the show, and I really just want to thank you so much for taking a moment to share your time and knowledge with our listeners today. Before getting started, is there anything you want to add or say to your listeners today?
The only thing that I would add is that, you know, honestly, everything that we do, we have to understand that, you know, we are blessed to be in the situation that we're in. God has blessed us with the stewardship manager role to manage all of his wealth and all of his finances. So we have to just make sure that we understand biblical sound financial principles in everything that we do. So that's the only thing that I would add as to the things that I try to focus people in this generational wealth building series.
That's great. That's great. And we're actually going to dive right in because today's show will just go a little differently, function a little different than previous shows. On today's segment, we will allow listeners to dial in and ask any questions specific to our topic today. So if you are listening in and you have a question for Teresa, we ask that you call in to 347-637-2319 and press 1. And the number again is 347-637-2319, and you just can press 1 to ask Teresa a question should you have it. Now, Teresa, on some of our previous shows, we introduced and discussed our real estate investing, and we spoke about, so we had some guests, and we spoke about the vehicles. The vehicles that we spoke on were the group investing, landlord-tenant relationships, owner financing, and we actually touched a little bit on forming LLCs. And I know that you're really big on speaking and sharing your knowledge on generational wealth. So today I was hoping that you would expound a little bit on how you work with your customers in teaching them on building generational wealth and what generational wealth means to you.
Absolutely. Well, the word tells us that it's a good man who leaves an inheritance for his children's children. So we always talk about building legacies. Everything that we do needs to look at the generations that's coming behind us. So my ultimate goal is to build generational wealth one generation up and three generations down. So I won't be totally financially free until my parents are financially free, until my children's children's children are financially free. And considering that I have a five-year-old granddaughter who has two properties right now, I think I am clearly on the road to making that happen. So for me, generational wealth in the area of real estate is basically passing down significant financial resources to those future generations. And it also deals with how real property transfers to heirs and those strategies for leaving real estate to heirs with minimal taxes. And of course, we got to think about our charity, you know, giving real estate, giving wealth, you know, just giving gifts, you know, for those futures behind us. But generational wealth is not necessarily just real estate. So what I teach my students, what I teach my clients, is that generational wealth means being self-sufficient, making sure that you're a good steward of your finances so that you can make sure that you can live a healthy and a wealthy life. So in those areas, when we talk about generational wealth, we're talking about one is real estate. Two is financial literacy, understanding what finances mean and what it can do, stock market investing, and business ownership. Those are the four vehicles that we are talking about when we speak on generational wealth. And then, you know, we talk about the circle of wealth and the three types of income, and that's really how we educate our customers, our clients, and our coaching students on building generational wealth.
Okay. That's good. I know this show is going to be broken down into many segments, so for you to expound on, you know, as you stated, the different ways for generational wealth. But if you can talk a little bit about some of the vehicles that you suggest through real estate investing that you highly recommend. I know on some of our previous segments, as I stated, we spoke a little bit about landlord-tenant relationships as well as the owner financing, and just a few other pieces of the group investing in the LLCs, but what are some of your suggestions when it comes to real estate investing that you suggest?
Well, the first thing that I would say is that we have to understand where we are in our financial position, and we can't do that until we really fully understand that circle of wealth that I mentioned previously, because there's three types of income. We got the earned income, that's trading hours for dollars, and that means that you're working, you know, for paying your bills and things of that sort. So that's trading hours for dollars. Then you have that passive residual income, and that's putting forth a single effort to get in, you know, get that in place with no additional effort. You know, you get paid over and over and over again. That's when we're talking about either a network marketing business or landlord-tenant when you're doing a rental property, because that tenant is paying you rent over a time to help pay down your mortgage, et cetera, et cetera. And then we talk about portfolio income. And that portfolio income is when your money is making money for you. So as you get up in the morning, you're actually taking your money out with a little suitcase, and they're actually going out making money too. So those are three types of income that we're talking about. Now, real estate falls into the areas of passive residual income and portfolio income. So when you're dealing with, you know, trying to buy a rental property, you're looking at residual income. Right now, because the market is so slim, because of credit, you know, being so, you know, low right now, and banks are not lending as much as they used to, we're now in a tightened lending standards situation, whereas the minimum credit score is now 720 to 740. So in this tough market, we have to find ways to be creative to try to get into that home ownership rental market area. So my strategies that I focus on with my coaching students and my real estate investors is dealing with seller financing. And those seller financing, you know, it's plenty of seller financing situations out there, but I focus on the three. And one of them is free and clear. And free and clear seller financing, that's the simplest seller financing option, is when the owner sells a home free and clear of all the liens. You know, they probably don't have a mortgage or anything like that,
yes,
and they're actually now being the bank. So that's what a free and clear closing, you know, closing situation financial seller financing is. And then you have another type, which is my favorite and what I focus on, is lease with option to buy. We know it as rent to own. So that's where the potential homeowner retains the option to buy the home, but without the, you know, the actual obligation of purchasing that property. And then lastly, my second favorite is the installment land contract, which an installment land contract gives the home buyer merely the equitable interest in the property while the legal title remains with the seller. So there are many options out there for those people who have limited resources, like low credit or, you know, low finances, and they just need time to actually, you know, build up their credit and build up their resources. And this provides them a way that they can actually get into real estate or get into their own home with little to no money and little to low credit.
Okay, so the first option to seller financing, you mentioned that that is an option, but that is one of your least favorite options. Why that option over the other two options? Why would that be your least favorite option?
Well, I don't think the free and clear is my least favorite. It's just the least opportunity, because there's rarely homeowners that I reach out to that actually has their property, they own their property
deep.
Outright. They have a mortgage
mm-hmm.
on it. So it's
mm-hmm.
kind of hard for me to find a homeowner
okay.
that I can actually do that type of closing where they actually replace the bank and they actually hold the note and I do the closing where they're holding the mortgage and I have to pay them the promissory note. So it's not my
okay.
least favorite. I would love that type of strategy.
Right.
However, I don't find that too often because most
it's
people are
common.
Underwater in their finances
mm-hmm.
with
right.
foreclosure mayhem. So I don't find that as much. So it's not my least favorite. So my
it's
favorite
just not
is these common. Options. Because that's control. And then my
okay.
second is land contract, because I can actually walk away from that. So I would say my third would be free and clear.
Okay. Can you just give a brief example of the land option? I know you gave an explanation of it, but can you put that in the form of an example so our listeners can kind of put themselves in the situation?
Oh, sure. Okay. So with a land contract, think about a land contract, which is also called a contract for deed or an agreement for deed or a land installment contract. And that's merely just a contract between a seller and a buyer of a real property situation, in which the seller provides financing to buy that property for an agreed upon purchase price. And the buyer repays that loan in installments. And an initial down payment, like, you know, a non-refundable deposit will be given. And then under the land contract, the seller retains that legal title to the property while permitting the buyer to take possession of it for the most purposes other than legal ownership. So think about it this way. You're in a situation where you just need 3 years to get yourself together. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You want to get this property and you want to buy it at the now current purchase price. The seller
uh-huh.
now says, okay, I will let you purchase this property. You're going to have to give me a down payment, and then you're going to have to make a PITI, which is your principal, your interest, your taxes, and insurance, over a 3-year period of time. However, uh-huh. I will allow you to actually amortize this loan over a 30-year period to keep your payments very low. But at that third year, my total balance will be due. So it would be a balloon that would be due at the end. At the end, if you don't have that balloon, you can then refinance into a traditional type of a mortgage so that you can buy the seller out and then you can own that property free and clear by taking title. That's what
mm.
a land contract is. And most people think
oh, wow.
about land contract as owning land and it's a contract on the ownership of land. But that's not what it is. It's actually a land installment contract, which is an agreement for deed. You're actually making an agreement to purchase this property, and then in return for that, you're actually going to get the deed at the end of that 3-year period or whatever that end period is.
Whatever
and the
that
way that you will
is.
Protect yourself, you know, because, you know, if the seller runs away or something like that, you're going to put
mm-hmm.
a lien on that property because you're going to record your interest in that property, and you're also going to make the homeowner sign over the deed and place it in escrow. So if anything ever happened to that seller in the midst of that, he dies or he moves or whatever the case may be, after you fulfill your obligation, you just give it to the escrow agent, and the escrow agent will release that deed, and you own that property now free and clear. That's
okay,
a land contract.
So with the original seller financing, you mentioned that most people, it's not as common because most people don't have the deed. So is the land contract almost like an assumable mortgage? Is the person who is signing into the contract, are they assuming the mortgage that already is on the property?
Well, usually with a land contract, the property is owned free and clear. So there is
okay.
no mortgage to assume. It's typically, you know, the homeowner owns that property outright and own it free and clear, and they will actually, you know, sell it on a land contract, installment contract. Now, there are times when there may be a mortgage on that property, and you will, you know, be able to do a land contract contract on that. That gets a little bit tricky because what you're going to have to do in that instance is you're going to have to now, you know, do an authorization of release to that title, to that mortgage bank, and let them know that you're now going to basically be acting as a property manager, if you will, because you're going to be making the payments directly to the bank, and whatever is left over, you would give that to the homeowner. Because think about it, you don't want to be paying the homeowner some type of, you know, land contract or payment every month, and then the seller, the homeowner, is not paying his mortgage.
Correct.
And then at the end of the 3 years, you find out that that home may be in foreclosure or have mm-hmm. some other liens placed on the property, no taxes being paid, et cetera, et cetera. So you would take mm-hmm. control of that, and then whatever was left would be given to the homeowner. But it's definitely not an assumable mortgage that you're actually paying. You're actually paying on a land contract. And most banks will not allow you to assume for that very purpose. Because they got to run your credit, they got
to
do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if
you
assume a mortgage, then you might as well go ahead and try to get a mortgage in the first place. You wouldn't have a land contract.
Okay. So owner financing is when the actual homeowner does outright have the deed to the property, and you have the option to do the land contract or the outright holding the mortgage for the homeowner. And you also mentioned the you can put yourself in the landlord type of situation, because not all times do most homeowners see investing as being the landlord as being attractive, because they don't want that responsibility. So that, but the other side to it is, as you stated, there is a lease with the option to purchase, which if you can from that actually happens a lot here, but there's a lump sum of money that is required down from the purchaser of the property, and as you kind of stated earlier, there is a purchase price that is agreed upon in advance. Am I correct?
Correct.
And you come to that agreement, and you pretty much act as the landlord for whatever the contract states, whether it's 3 years or 5 years or 7 years, whatever you and that homeowner agree to. And if you pretty much renege on the contract, then that the purchaser loses that deposit or their down payment. But you as the homeowner would have collected, you know, that rent per month. Or if they can't make the agreement by that third, fifth, or seventh year, then, you know, they lose their deposit.
Correct, but I do want to correct one thing, because there's two mm-hmm. forms of lease option, rent to own.
Okay.
You have the straight out rent to own, where the homeowner called the seller, and then you have the person who's going to actually purchase that home as the actual owner occupant type of thing. So mm-hmm. they're actually going to be in that lease option, and you have the other type that is now you have the seller, then you have the investor in the middle, and then you have the end lessee, tenant buyer, who's going to purchase it at the end. And the mm-hmm. investor is the middleman, which is the common type that I do. That's called a sandwich lease option. But basically what I want, you know, to instill in people as far as the lease option, it's not ownership, it's control. So most people who do a lease option as an investor, you know, they are just wanting to control that real estate, because what they're doing now is they have a right to assign and they have a right to sublease in that actual agreement. So you do have that upfront non-refundable option payment that you're going to have to pay, but, you know, you're going to get that in buyer, tenant, lessee to actually pay the option. So let's just say it's a $30,000 property. And, you know, you have to pay 10% down. That's $3,000. What you're going to do is, on the flip side, you may find a tenant, an in-tenant lessee, and they're going to do a lease option from you. And you're going to charge them a $4,500 deposit, non-refundable option payment. And now you're going to give the $3,000 option payment to the seller who requested that, and then you're going to get the $4,500, that's a balance of $1,500, you get to keep that in your mm-hmm. pocket. So now, as an investor, you don't even own the property, yet you made $1,500 on this transaction.
Understood.
Now,
that's
on that monthly rental term, let's just say that the seller wants $300 a month from you, because he owns it outright, and all he wants mm-hmm. is $300 from that property. Then, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to charge the in lessee, you know, probably $600. and then if you charge them $600, you give the $300 to the seller, and then you get to keep the $300 cash flow from that in-tenant lessee on that lease option deal. Now, with a lease option, Wells Fargo is one of the few banks that treats a lease option as a refinance. So at the end of your 12-month period or, you know, your 24-month, however long you have this, you know, when you, your in-lessee goes to qualify for that mortgage, Wells Fargo would treat that as a refinance as long as you have the lease agreement, the option agreement, and that they have paid above market rent, because you can't pay market rent when you're dealing with a lease option to qualify for a mortgage. You have to pay above market rent. That's why I said $600. So we're going to assume that market rent was $500.
Gotcha.
I'm going to charge
you
$600. So that's how that works.
Okay. Now you mentioned that Wells Fargo looks at it as a refinance. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
That's an excellent thing because you don't have to qualify as strictly with a refinance as you would with first-time money mortgage.
Okay. Now, these are all really, really great options and really, really good information. Now, just to touch a little bit on for those that have little to no money or credit, how can they transition into the world of real estate? If they want to get into investing, are there any suggestions? Because I know you yourself are an investor. Are there any suggestions that you have for those listeners who are very interested, but they don't have as much cash or they don't think they have enough liquidable cash to invest in real estate, but they're very interested in doing so?
Well, the first thing that I would say is I would ask them to do a financial check on themselves as far as how much resources do they have to actually invest in real estate. And when I say, you know, invest, I'm talking about an education, you know, join a national REIA chapter in their area. If you go to nationalrea.com, you'll have a list of find a REIA. And I would suggest that people only deal with REIAs that's affiliated with National REIA because they're a nonprofit organization. You know, they represent over 40,000 investors, property manager companies, apartment associations, and they actually, you know, deal with the ethics of real estate investing. And get into a good teaching REIA so that you can learn different strategies. And also, in the meantime, if you have less than a 720 credit score, I would suggest that everyone, you know, start working on their credit. If they can't do it on their own, there are reputable credit restoration companies that they can go into. You know, my company charges $499 for a full year of services. They give you a 6-month money-back guarantee. You know, they also give you a website so you can check and see what's going on with yourself and give you education towards that. And after 6 months, if you're not fully satisfied, you get your money back, no questions asked. We're also a part of NACSO, the National Association of Credit Services Organization. You want to find a company that is ethical, that, you know, gives you education, and that is not requiring money up front from you, because under law, a credit repair company cannot charge up front unless they're a bank, a credit union, or a nonprofit. Okay? My company happens to be a nonprofit. So those are some of the reasons why, you know, you need to, you know, get your credit right, because even if you're wholesaling, and wholesaling is really just putting a property under contract at a good deal and then assigning your rights to close on that property to an investor who will pay cash.
That's interesting.
About $5,000. I mean, you would charge them $5,000, $2,000 for that right to assign. So that's a great way for new investors to get into real estate without money or without credit, wholesaling.
Okay. Now, what is that website, as you stated, with the as your website for the credit restoration for those who are having those challenges with credit?
That website is netwealthcreditpartners.com. That's netwealthcreditpartners.com.
Okay. And there was a question that actually was posed right before the show, and it, what are some of your suggestions for those who have fear? They are in position to invest, but they're pretty much fearful because they think it's an overwhelming amount of information, or they don't know quite what to do. Would you still recommend that they join the National REIA, that association? Or, you know, what are some of the steps that you will advise for some people who are just fearful and overwhelmed and not knowing what to do? Even with the education, they're just scared. Teresa, did we lose you? Okay. Teresa, are you there?
The fear actually is, you know, understandable. And fear is what, you know, paralyzes us from doing anything that we want to do. One of the things that I would suggest is if anyone has any type of fear in real estate, what I would suggest is they can always either go to my website or go to my my REIA website, and they can just fill out the ebook that I have. And with that ebook, I'm actually going to have you in my database, and I actually have free articles that I send just for new investors to actually just get them to understand what types of strategies are out there, just to relieve that type of fear. And I also, you know, have webinars, you know, that I actually put out there, and it's a free education tool, financial literacy, that I can actually help them with. So that's what I would suggest, is that, you know, they go to my RIAnyc.org website or my TeresaRMartin.com website and just fill out information, and then I'll have you in my database, and I'll definitely send you more information, or ask me a question, and I'll be glad to answer it.
That's great, Teresa. And I believe we had a question that came through on the line from a Tiffany.
I'll definitely send you more information or ask me a question, and I'll be glad to answer it.
Hello? That's great, Teresa. And I believe we had a question that came through on the line from a Tiffany.
I'll definitely send you more information or ask me a question, and I'll be glad to answer it.
Hello? That's great, Teresa.
I'm here.
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry, Teresa. Just wanted, a question came in from Tiffany, wants to know, how difficult is it to get people into the lease option loan?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Like, I guess the person who will be signing the purchase contract, how difficult is it for them to get into the lease option loan?
It's not actually hard, and it's not really considered a lease option loan. It would be a regular type of loan. And just to be clear, in a lease option, there's three type of paperwork that, you know, you'll be dealing with. You have the option contract, you have the lease contract, which is the landlord-tenant contract, and then once that person says, okay, I am now ready, willing, and able to purchase this property, I already got qualified, and I am ready to do my purchase agreement. Now that person signs a purchase agreement, now it's treated just like a regular type of, you know, sale contract. But you're going to be working with your power team, which is your attorney
mm-hmm.
that's going to be in place. You already should have, you know, your mortgage broker in place, who has worked with you all along to make sure that the DTI, the debt-to-income ratio, is where it needs to be, and that their credit is where it needs to be, and now
mm-hmm.
that they are fully ready to actually get into that loan. So it wouldn't be hard at all, as long as you're doing things in stages and working with the
mm-hmm.
mortgage broker, with that end buyer, all the time that they're in that lease option agreement. So whether it's 12
okay.
months, whether it's 24 months or 36 months, you'll always have that team checking in. And I always make my lessee tenant buyers always go into a credit restoration program. Because I have one,
that's
I don't
smart.
Charge them for that. It's actually taken out of their option payment, and I just put them into the credit restoration program, so I know that they'll be able to qualify based on their credit, and with their debt-to-income ratio being at least 36% so that they can get approved for the mortgage, I make sure that I work with them along the way. Because there's a lot of scam artists out there. They put people in lease options. They know that they have poor credit. They know that they have low DTIs or high DTIs, and they know they won't be able to qualify, but what they're hoping on is that they don't file their intent to purchase that property or don't qualify for a mortgage. They get them out and do it all over again. That's why a lot of states have barred lease option agreements, like the city of Baltimore and the state of Texas. But if you do it mm-hmm. ethically, it's not hard at all to get that person qualified for a mortgage. Thanks for your question,
mm-hmm.
Tiffany.
Okay, and how about, just to kind of go a little bit further into the question, how hard or difficult is it to get someone out of the property who isn't paying as they agreed to pay?
It takes the same amount of effort as it would as a regular landlord-tenant, because that's what it is. It's a landlord-tenant. The option that they pay is really just the option to purchase the property, not an obligation to purchase the property. So it's like giving the landlord or the seller an option to remove that property off the sales listing, so you have the first right of refusal. So after you pay that, you're treated just like a regular landlord-tenant situation, and if you don't pay, you actually get evicted through the same eviction processes as you would as a regular tenant. But the difference is that most people who get on a lease option, if you pre-qualify them ahead of time, you're dealing with people who want to be homeowners. You're not dealing with the same mindset of tenants. So I can tell you, I have never, and I can say never, had to evict anyone on a lease option, because these people take care of the properties like it's their own because they have the intent to purchase. So we're not dealing with a tenant mindset. We're dealing with a homeowner mindset.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we are coming to the end of our show, and I want to thank you, Teresa, again for your time, and we want to thank our listeners. Thank you so much, Tiffany, for your question. We will continue this segment next month, December 29th, which is a Saturday at 12:30. We will have our guest, Teresa Martin, come back, and we will touch on some additional topics regarding investing. And we want to thank our listeners for tuning in. Teresa, was there anything that you want? Please provide all of your contact information before we close out the show, your website, your telephone numbers, and how people can get in contact with you for the services that you offer, please.
Absolutely. You can reach me directly at Teresa, that's T-E-R-E-S-A-R, Martin, MARTIN.com, or my real estate investor website at www.reanyc, that's R-E-I-A-N-Y-C.org, and my telephone number I can be reached is area code 646-467-7370, 646-467-7370. I look forward to hearing from everyone, and any questions you have, I will be more than happy to help you build generational wealth and break the chains of generational poverty. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Teresa. And for all of our listeners, please email me any questions that you may have for Teresa to answer for the next show. I'm just going to provide that number, my email address, which is Sharon@HREAssociates.com. Again, it's Sharon@HREAssociates.com. If there were any questions that you have for Teresa to answer for the next show, please feel free to email me those questions, and I will get them to Teresa and make sure that we address those questions on our next show. Thank you all so much for tuning in to Real Estate Straight Talk with Sharon Homer, and I hope you all have a happy holiday.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.